Hi, Monk Podcast listeners. The following is a sample of the Monk Members Only Podcast. To access the full-length edition of this episode and all of our regular Monk Members Only Podcasts, go to our website, www.monkdebates.com, and register for membership. Membership is free, and it's available for you right now at www.monkdebates.com. Hope you enjoy the program. Hello, Monk members. Rudyard Griffiths here, your host and moderator. Welcome to this, the Monk Members Only Podcast. This is our weekly program where we dig into the big issues and ideas in the news, focus on the stories that are changing our world, hopefully leaving you with some new analysis and insights. We're so fortunate each week to be joined by Janice Gross-Stein for these conversations. She's the founding director of the Monk School of Global Affairs, an internationally renowned scholar and author, and she's all ours for the next half hour. Janice, the summer is not giving us a break. I had thought we would be struggling to find topics and ideas to discuss in the middle of the summer and the start of August, but wow, what a week.
When are the dog days of August coming, Rudyard? And let me tell you, if you live in Taiwan, if you live in Japan, and you see these missiles flying, you know that we are not in the dog days of August.
Yeah, so a big week for us to unpack with you. And let's start with the events of the last 72 hours. We've had, unless you've been in a bunker somewhere or maybe pleasantly cut off from the internet at your cottage, you will be aware that the third highest ranking official in the United States, Nancy Pelosi, the U.S. Speaker of the House of Representatives, visited Taiwan, stayed overnight, made some pretty, charitably, assertive comments about America supporting Taiwanese freedom and independence. This has caused a reaction from the Chinese, maybe a much bigger reaction, we can get into this, than the Americans certainly hoped for. Janice, I guess my kickoff question to you is, what is the logic behind what we've seen from, give us the view out of the U.S., you know, National Security Council, the Situation Room? What were they thinking here? Tom Friedman had a good piece.
Blistering piece,
saying in a sense, like, it not too wise a strategic doctrine to pick a fight with two, you know, great power peer competitors at the same time. That resonated with me, Janice.
I am really critical of her visit. Let me start off by saying that. And that is not an uncontroversial statement, Rudyard. I'm sure that there are many among our listeners that feel that taking a principled stand in favor of Taiwan, it is a democracy, speaking up now and making clear to China how important it is that China not use force against Taiwan, is the right thing to do. And that explains how Nancy Pelosi thinks. She has been a human rights campaigner all her life. She unfurled a banner in Tiananmen Square when she was much younger, and she has never missed a chance to promote human rights and democracy. Now, that having been said, there was a big difference between rhetoric and support. And it seems to me foolish to the extreme, Rudyard, for the third highest ranking official, the third in line to the presidency, but nevertheless, the leader of an independent branch of government, and that's the other problem that Biden had here, to go to Taiwan for 19 hours, that was the length of her stay there, to make these statements knowing that you were going to provoke Xi Jinping. Now, how did this happen? Because there was not a single institution in the national security apparatus in the United States that did not try in private to ask her not to go. From the president to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to the CIA. Literally everybody said to her, this is not a smart thing to do. But she's Speaker of the House. And Biden did not want to have an open brawl with her. Given the legislation that's moving through Congress, he did not want to undermine the relationship between the executive and the legislature. So after asking politely, along with everybody else, and she was so determined that she went. Now, just let me make one point here before I bounce back to you. Just imagine if you're Xi Jinping. How do you make sense that the Speaker of the House can do this against the president's wishes? It doesn't matter what your advisors are going to tell you. That is unbelievable within the Chinese context. So they see this as deliberately orchestrated.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's noodle around before we get into some of the specifics here in the Chinese response and what this might foretell. I want to get your thoughts on, again, the how this connects back to Ukraine, because we were in a pretty important fight over the future of the liberal international order in the Ukraine with Russia, that we were pushing that fight hard. We're taking some real risks, but there was also something very important to fight for there, the territorial sovereignty and independence of a free Ukraine. So no small task, no light lift. And then seemingly to me, out of the blue, we've now decided to go all the way around the world, you know, the antipode, so to speak, to America geographically, to challenge another great power competitor about a piece of real estate that, a bit like Ukraine to Russia, has deep cultural, historical, and ideological ties back to the regime. Is this just coincidence, Janice, that we're doing this? Or I want you to set me right here. To me, there's a feeling here of American kind of hubris, a view that they still have the power to have the world look and unfold and behave like they want it to be. I don't know. This makes me nervous. I feel overreach here. I feel a moment of danger where there's just that expression, your reach exceeding your grasp. I mean, wow.
You know, the fact that he would put this picture together the way you just did, Rudyard, is exactly the way many governments in Asia are looking at this incident. They don't see these niceties of a disagreement between the president and the speaker, and a speaker who is determined to do what she wants to do despite the best advice. This is a really hard story to tell outside the United States, frankly. It's really tough. You have to understand the quirkiness of American institutions to really get the picture. No, almost nobody in Asia gets it. And let's just talk for a minute about the Australians and the Japanese. And wow, Penny Wong came out with a statement. There's a new government in Australia, and she was biting in her criticism of the United States for failing to consult their allies in the region. This is the last thing they wanted. You know, Nancy Pelosi then goes on to Tokyo, where, you know, the Japanese are right in the eye of the storm here, because these missiles were landing in the expanded economic zone directly outside the territorial waters of Japan. It's never happened before. He's alarmed. He didn't have a voice in this. So paradoxically, leave aside what message this sends to China, this is a troubling message for close allies. There are no closer allies of the United States in the region than Australia and Japan. Both of them were upset by what they consider an ill-timed, unnecessary provocation. why did, if you were going to argue there was any reason to do this, it would be the connection you just draw to, you drew to Ukraine. There is an argument in Washington that if the United States had made clear to Russia, explicitly clear, well enough and long enough before, that would have deterred Russia from launching the invasion. I don't agree with that argument. They did make clear, but nevertheless, that is a story, and that is driving some people, and not the president and not the Secretary of State, but it is driving a conversation in the United States. Stand up now, make clear now that the use of force is unacceptable. But as we're going to see, that's not the story that comes out of here, because the Chinese have done something in the last 3 days that they have never done before. So here's a bigger picture for me, Roger. I'm tired of rhetoric. There's the morning after the rhetoric. And I don't think Pelosi gave enough thought to what happens the next day. It's easy to get on a plane and fly and make a statement on the ground about solidarity and support. But what happens the next day?
Yeah. I want to read you a quote from the Chinese ambassador to the United States in an op-ed published today. We're recording on Friday, the 5th of August. I think it's important for us to spend a little time on the Chinese perspective on this, because, look, you can take it right or wrong, but I think we all should kind of challenge ourselves to try to put ourselves in the mindset of groups and countries and strategic worldviews that aren't as familiar to us. The U.S. worldview is very familiar. We live it every day in our media. It shapes a lot of Canadian doctrine. So this is what the Chinese ambassador said in the Washington Post. Quote, just think, if an American state were to secede from the United States and declare independence, and then some other nation provided weapons and political support for that state, would the U.S. government or the American people allow this to happen? And I guess what I'm trying to get at here, Janice, is that it's easy for us to, and it's important for us to acknowledge Taiwan as a successful democracy, but should we give some cognitive space to understanding that the Chinese feel that Taiwan has been part of China proper for over a millennium up to the last century? It was then violently taken from them by a colonial power, Japan, the same power that engaged in the rape of Nanking. So, you know, no love lost between historically between the Chinese people and the Japanese. And that the way they view Taiwan is very different than, let's say, even the way they viewed Hong Kong. This is maybe, is the analogy closer to Ukraine, to how maybe the Russians see the territory of Ukraine, rightly or wrongly, in many cases wrongly, as part of some, you know, mystical Kievan Rus that animates the broader Russian identity. Let's unpack a bit of this, because I think, again, I'm not endorsing the Chinese view, but I'm just trying to push us, challenge us a little bit to put ourselves into the Chinese mindset, maybe to better understand the risks that are involved here.
Yeah, I think it is very important to understand how the Chinese think about Taiwan, Richard. I agree with you. It doesn't justify what they're doing, but I think it is important to understand it. And when you were telling the story, you took it right up to 1949. There's one little piece missing there, that at the end of a really brutal civil war in China between Chiang Kai-shek and the Chinese communists led by Mao Zedong, Chiang lost and evacuated his forces onto the island of Taiwan.
And just remember, Chiang Kai-shek was supported by the Americans, by the Western powers, as a effectively their preferred
candidate.
Emperor for a new dictatorial China that they would control.
Yeah. So what's gone on in Taiwan since that time? And I think there's three different perspectives that are important here. The first, there were indigenous people who lived in Taiwan. And all of a sudden, wow, across the Straits come, you know, highly organized people from China with an army and with the military. And they didn't get much of a voice at all in what happened in Taiwan. And they are the largest indigenous community in this part of the world. A piece of the story we always miss. Then you have Chiang Kai-shek, and it takes 3 decades for politics to evolve to the point where we now talk legitimately about Taiwan as a democracy. And that first generation of people, loyal and some tied to the mainland, family on the mainland, personal memories, that's gone now. There's a generation of younger people growing up in Taiwan who are not connected in the same way, are fierce defenders of their democracy and support for reunification with the mainland dropping with each generation. And they've come to value their independence, which is what makes this so hard. Now, when Chinese leaders speak about this, they're very careful. They say, oh, Taiwan is very different from Ukraine. Ukraine was an independent sovereign state.
Right.
There's a gap there between the way China speaks about Ukraine and Russia thinks about Ukraine. But Taiwan, it's always been part of China. Always.
Right. Maybe just remind people the one China policy, which.
Yeah. So, and then we get to Richard Nixon.
And Henry Kissinger, former monk debater.
That's right. And 1970, in a really gutsy decision for Republicans, when Nixon goes to China, and he's doing this for realpolitik reasons. He wants to split China off from Russia. Russia was the principal adversary, and they agree on one China. Taiwan is part of China, but the deal, China will not use force to reintegrate Taiwan. So we're in an area here of subtlety. The lower key you keep this, the better for everybody. Taiwan continues to exist and to have its own democratic practices and traditions. Nobody recognizes it as an independent sovereign state, not Nancy Pelosi's language at all. And the Chinese do not invade over the straits to reoccupy Taiwan. And that's what's been in place for 50 years.
But it requires subtlety in order to keep this going. Let's acknowledge what's happened over the last half decade or so, because there's some eerie similarities here to Ukraine. There are now billions of dollars of U.S. weapon systems and arms sales into Taiwan. There are U.S. CIA and special forces operatives on the soil in Taiwan training the Taiwanese army. There are high-level political delegations, Nancy Pelosi showing up and, you know, not explicitly, but about as close to explicitly as you can get, allying the United States with Taiwan and implying, as Joe Biden did in the last year, a much more forthright American intention to militarily support Taiwan and its independence. I mean, are we wrong to think that there's a similar trajectory, a similar set of dynamics that are playing out right now in Taiwan, that we've seen this movie before and we know where it's going to end, which is in the reaction of the great power, where this geography is immediate to their, what they see rightly or wrongly, in many cases wrongly, is their territorial sovereignty, their sphere of influence. Boy, the parallels to me abound.
You're right that we are dealing with, I think Taiwan is the Straits of Taiwan are the most dangerous spot in the world. Way more dangerous than Ukraine, believe it or not. Rendered from my perspective, but both of these countries live next door to great powers with long historical memories who believe this territory belongs to them.
And grievance and deep
anger deep at grievances. The West and deep anger at the West. And, you know, you literally can't have a conversation with a Chinese. I can't in the academic world in China colleague without getting to the 150 years of humiliation that China experienced.
The Chinese compared to the Russians, there is a pretty shameful history. I mean, we've acknowledged our colonialism and the sins of our colonialism within our own country. I don't know the extent to which we've fully acknowledged our the Opium Wars, the brutal economic and political subjugation that China went through in the 19th century at the hands of the Western powers that involved the deaths of millions of Chinese.
That's a very vivid part of historical memory for mainlanders, frankly. And let's talk just a little bit for a moment about what's gone on in the last 48 hours, because it tells you so much about where China is today, as opposed to where it was in 1995, 1996, the last time this blew up. There was a similar provocation, and the Chinese sent their Navy.
Exactly. Newt Gingrich,
Same speaker.
We knew what happened last time, and now we're doing it again.
Oh, yeah. But the reaction is different by an order of magnitude. Okay. And I think that's really important. The last time they responded to a speaker visit, they sent their Navy just fundamentally within the straits. And what did the United States do? Sent the carrier, the Ronald Reagan, in full blast. And that was the end of that. And that was largely reflected the balance of naval power at that time. Fast forward almost 30 years, right? What do we see? And a set of exercises. And I think this is really important for all of us to recognize. Totally different. The Chinese Navy has effectively conducting live fire exercises surrounding Taiwan. So this is a rehearsal. This provided them with the opportunity to rehearse sealing off and blockading Taiwan. Number one. Number two, they showed with their missile strikes that they can reach Okinawa, where an American basis. There's no U.S. decision maker who's not sitting up now, as well as Japanese. Yeah. So, and there's no response, in effect, because the balance of naval power has shifted. And the United States is trying, Biden is certainly trying as much as he can now to de-escalate and walk it back and not to respond. They canceled a missile test because they don't want to take even the smallest chance that this will escalate right now. You have to look at the differences over the 30 years and say, China is a big power in this region. This is right in China's backyard. The best hope for Taiwan's democracy is careful, quiet negotiations with Xi Jinping that reassures him that Taiwan will not become yet again an outpost. That's not what we're seeing. And let's throw one more piece into this mix, which people don't talk about enough. And boy, Nancy Pelosi met with him when she was there too, the president of the largest semiconductor manufacturing company in the world is Taiwan's. It makes the most advanced, it is the last stop for the manufacturing of most advanced computer chips. And were any kind of major conflict to break out, that could bring every advanced industry in the world to a halt.
Yeah.
That's why this is the most dangerous part of the world. You need to tread carefully in this part of the world.
So normally we would take a break here and you'd hear a commercial from me trying to get you to buy a Monk membership. I'm not going to do that because this is such a great conversation. I want to keep the momentum going. But if you are interested in membership, we'd love to have you join www.monkdebates.com/membership. You've been listening to a sample of the Monk Members Only podcast. To access the rest of the episode, consider becoming a member. Membership is free and available at www.monkdebates.com. Once you've joined as a member, go to your membership profile to access the rest of this episode and all of our Monk Members podcasts. Thanks for listening.